Good morning, radio listeners. Thank you for joining us this lovely Saturday morning at 7:30 for your personal reality with Marianne and Dr. P. And if you've been listening to that lovely music that Dr. P selected for the introduction, you're probably going to get an idea of what we're going to be talking about today. Can you hear me?
What did you say?
I said, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Well, today's show is going to give you answers to many questions about one of our most important senses, our hearing. The information that we're going to talk about today is taken from a book that was written by the neuroscience sensory unit students and Dr. P, who is their mentor and instructor. The book is called Auditory Science Facts, and it's available on Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, in hardback, paperback, or ebook. We'd like you to contact us on our website, which is dr.p.isbn@gmail.com. We want to hear your ideas about any future shows you'd like us to do, and comments about what you've been hearing on our shows or anything else you'd like to tell us. So, Dr. P, I'm going to send the first question.
Well, let me make a comment first, please, Mary.
Sure, go right ahead.
Again, this is from the Auditory Science Facts books that we wrote, that I wrote with, I think there's like 7 or 8 or 9 students. And I asked Marianne to just go through the book and pick out some just general questions that she thinks sound regarding auditory science facts. And like in the preface of the book, to give you an example of what's inside, there's a kind of a joke, but it's not really a joke. If a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, does it make a sound? Now, the preface will explain that in such great detail that you can solve that mystery forever. But we have 201 questions inside the book, and there you can self-teach yourself auditory science or all about hearing. And so if you have to deal with someone who's deaf, if you're taking care of someone who's deaf or has hearing issues, this might be it'll give you insight into a lot of the things going on inside the person's hearing, hearing structures. So anyway, we have compiled about 10 questions that we're going to answer on today's show. Hope you check out the book. I believe the ebook's only $2.98, so that's not very much money. So with that said, Marianne, what's the first question that you picked out of the book?
Dr. P, I'd like to know, why do your ears pop when you ride on an airplane?
Oh, I like this question. I always have liked it. It was one of those things when I first got on an airplane, I wanted to understand. Now, the first thing to understand about hearing, not the first thing, one of the things that you should know is that the auditory canal is an air passageway that interfaces, that bombards the tympanic membrane. Well, on the other side of the tympanic membrane is the ossicles or the middle ear. And there's also air in that area of your hearing device. And the thing is that if you disturb the pressure across the tympanic membrane, there's supposed to be equal pressure all the time, unless you, say, dive deep in a pool and your ears pop from the pressure of the water. You ascend in an airplane, and the pressure, when you ascend in an airplane, I hope you recognize that the air gets thinner the higher up you go until you hit the stratosphere, and then you start getting into space where there's no molecules, and sound doesn't transfer through space. But the point I'm trying to make is that flying, if as the plane rises in altitude, I'll just use the rise of the altitude to answer this because it's right from the book. But I want you to remember that there's any time you have a pressure change across the tympanic membrane, your ears will pop when you let it go. When you chew or do something like that. So as the plane rises in altitude, the air pressure outside the ear is lower than the pressure inside the ear. So in other words, before the plane ascended to higher air, to actually lower air pressure as it climbed, the plane climbed, then you disturb the equilibrium across the tympanic membrane. So in other words, the auditory canal is holding air at a lower pressure than the middle ear. And so what happens is the station tube pushes the higher pressure air from the middle ear that is connected to the eustachian tube into the mouth in order to eliminate pressure difference. And that's resulting in a popping noise. So I gotcha. What's the next question?
Thank you for that explanation, Dr. P. It was very enlightening. Tell me, how are people able to maintain their balance? Does that have anything to do with the ears?
Of course it does. But, it's actually quite a complicated process that your body goes through. For instance, sensory receptors in the eyes and muscles and joints are important for vestibulation or the sense of balance. So in other words, you have sense receptors in your muscles. I believe they're called spindle cells. You have receptors in your eyes that tell you if you are balanced or not. But let me just read from the text of the book. Sensory receptors in the eyes, muscles, and joints are important for balance, or the sense of balance, which is vestibulation. In the eyes, visual input sends signals to the brain regarding the body's orientation relative to its surroundings. At the same time, receptors in the muscles and joints respond to changes in the pressures of the skin and also send signals to the brain about the body's orientation. In addition to these structures, the center of vestibular system is located in the ear. So probably one of the most critical evolutionary developments for human beings has been the development of the ears to help with balance. So an apparatus in the ear containing the utricle, saccule, and semicircular canals helps detect changes in linear and rotational motion. There's three different semicircular canals, and they're oriented at approximately 90 degree angles. So you have 3D space detection inside your ear using the vestibular canals. So these canals cover the three axes of motion. When the head moves, the fluid in these canals lags due to inertia, which activates a specific receptor that sends information to the cerebellum and brainstem, which is a primitive brain structure that contains the pons and medulla. And this lag of inertia can give you information that your brain processes on the direction of head movement. The cerebellum is a structure that helps process vestibular information, maintain balance, and controls fine motor functions. By controlling fine motor functions, what it means is if you want to touch your nose, it's gross motor movement up to the point where you're right about to touch it. And some people who have cortical damage or auditory damage cannot, when they reach their nose, their fingers shake all over the place because they can't do the fine movement. So anyway, this signal is the auditory signals are integrated with the information from the vestibular. The vestibular system signal is integrated with the information gathered by the eyes and muscles, allowing the cerebellum to adjust body posture appropriately. So is that, do you have any questions about that, Marianne?
So there's a test that a doctor does, is it for Parkinson's or some sort of neurological test that they ask the patient to put their finger on their nose? Is that what you just described?
Yes.
Yes.
So they're testing your fine ability to have fine motor control, which the cerebellum is critical for, among other things.
Another question is, why have humans and many other species evolved to have two ears? I guess two is better than one, but does it have anything to do with balancing?
Actually, this is a more complicated question than the last one. Why have humans and many other species evolved to have two ears? Well, the answer is one proposed reason for the evolution of two ears comes from the duplex theory, which states that sound localization, or the ability to pinpoint the location of sound, comes from two properties of the reception. The intraoral time difference, in other words, the time difference when sound reaches your right ear, then your left ear if the sound source is on your right, and intraoral level difference. And the level of intensity decreases minutely across, let's say you have a loudspeaker on your right, and by the time the sound travels from your right ear to your left ear, the intensity decreased a little, as well as the time of arrival for the left ear is longer. And the brain can process these slight changes. In fact, what I find fascinating is that the speed of sound is fast enough that it takes only microseconds, 10 to the minus 6 seconds, for your sound to go from the right ear to the left ear. And since it's microseconds and the neuron's firing rate is milliseconds, the evolution had to figure out a way to detect something on a microsecond time scale and compare it to something on a millisecond time scale.
So let me interrupt and ask you a question I just thought of, Dr. P. If you were to lose your hearing completely in one ear or the other, would your brain be compensating in hearing sound because the one ear is no longer operating the correct way?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't think it's possible to have sound location if you only have one ear working.
So you're not aware of where the sound's coming from? Is that what you're saying in sound location?
You can't determine the source of a sound very well. I mean, you might be able to some degree, because if it's loud on the... No, I don't know. You've got me.
It's a very interesting question, though, because obviously the body was made with two parts of... with two ears for some reason.
Yes.
So tell me, what is the role of hearing in memory? Recently read something about that's called infantile amnesia, which an infant can't remember anything before the age of three. Am I correct?
I think so, yes.
So prior to the age of three, it's because their memory is not processing? Or tell me about the role of hearing.
Well, it's actually quite significant. It's not something people talk about in the layman community. But in terms of hearing loss has been associated with different forms of dementia, including Alzheimer's disease. And I remember the last time I went to get my ears checked at an audiologist. The doctor told me that he has patients who are elderly and they start losing hearing, and the hearing loss can contribute to the dementia. and it can't be fixed. If you know, if you get hearing loss, you should get it taken care of as soon as possible, because in fact your brain uses that information constantly for memory, not only memory but stores well,
an understanding of things, correct?
An understanding, yeah.
Isn't that part of why patients with dementia have such difficulty? They starting to not be able to comprehend what's being said to them?
Exactly. In part, that's true. But it is also important to note that hearing loss does not necessarily, it doesn't cause dementia or memory loss. But this audiologist told me it does. It can contribute to dementia if it's not fixed.
Okay, Dr. P, what? Tell me what sound waves are.
Oh, sound waves. Sound waves are changes in pressure that occur within a medium. A medium being air, water, solids. So they are caused by the vibration of an object, thus moving the medium surrounding it.
Dr. P, thanks for the answer about the sound waves. And is that the reason that underwater fish and dolphins and whales can communicate because of the sound waves?
Actually, that's quite interesting because in this case, the medium is water, the ocean, and the oceans are connected around the world. And I remember reading a long time ago that whales can communicate around the globe by their noises underwater or their noises in water, whatever. It's transmitted through the ocean, which is continuous.
And tell me, is there energy in sound?
Absolutely. Since sound is created from the compression and rarefaction of pressure waves, it does contain energy. The energy is usually measured relative to other sound energies in decibels.
Okay, this is a question that when I read it in your book, I thought was really interesting. Tell me, what is the difference between your own perception of your voice and others' perception of it, and how does this come about?
Oh, wow. Well, there are two ways that one can hear auditory messages or speaking. When others speak, the sound waves normally enter the external ear and into the tympanic membrane and then goes on and on and on through the auditory apparatus. However, when you speak out loud, your vocal cords vibrate the bones in the skull before reaching the tympanic membrane. Remember, sound can transmit through any medium that has molecules. And that's why it can't transmit in outer space, because there's no molecules.
So that's where there's no sound in outer space?
That's why there's no sound in outer space.
Because there's no molecules.
You need molecules to have a pressure wave, and really it's just the air continuously cycling through, compressing the molecules into a higher density, then a lower density right next to it, then a higher density. It's just a propagating set of waves that the mechanical vibration will vibrate the eardrum, and the eardrum will cause the ossicles to do their work in transducing in the energy from sound air pressure waves into fluid pressure waves. And that's where you get the transduction started.
So do you think in the future there's ever going to be a way that someone will figure out how to put a molecule in space so sound can happen?
No way.
There's no way. Okay.
That's an interesting question, but even if you put molecules in the in outer space, there's so much space around, they'll just...
It won't be effective?
They'll diffuse all over the atmosphere, so you'd have to fill up the entire universe with molecules.
Hmm. I just thought maybe that would be a good project for Elon Musk to work on. All right, let's get down to business here. Do you hear sounds when you're asleep, Dr. P?
Oh, it's when you sleep, it's interesting. But during sleep, the brain continues to process sounds on a subconscious level. This explains why you can be awakened by a sudden noise, like the slamming of a door, the frontal lobe of the brain, which is responsible for speaking, movement, sleep regulation, and your subconscious monitors these things during your sleep. While your ability to hear normally sounds like music is minimized, a loud sound during the night will still stimulate the prefrontal cortex, waking the person up.
So then what happens? The sound has to come into the ear first, and then that connects the brain to wake you up, or?
Yes, of course. The sound and the sound pressure wave in the air would have to connect with your auditory system, which means it starts vibrating the tympanic membrane at an intensity loud enough that the prefrontal cortex is woken up, wakes you up.
Well, I never really imagined that the ears would have such an important function on so much of what we do every single day. Do rescue dogs use hearing to track down the location of people?
Rescue dogs mainly rely on smell to track people down, as their olfactory senses are exceptional. Dogs locate humans either by tracking, by following scents on the ground, such as those produced by fallen skin, or by air scent. So they don't really use sound to do the location.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, what is the scent?
Actually, let me take that back.
Okay.
If the dog gets close to the person, and the person is walking through the woods and breaking sticks as he walks, they're creating a sound pressure wave from the stick break, and that sound, the dog can use his ears for echolocation to find the guy. But that's at the end of the target for the dog. The dog has to be close enough to hear the weak sounds of branches crackling or someone running or some whatever.
So then the sound is the secondary sense that the dog uses.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he will use it. He'll move his ears in the direction, you know. These dogs can put their, you know, even if they're floppy, the ears can be pointed up and you can collect sound for echolocation.
Hmm. What is the sound that we hear when we place our ear next to a seashell?
There are multiple theories for what you hear. However, the most plausible one states that the shell captures ambient noise around you, which resonates inside the shell. So in other words, the shell is solid, and sound waves will travel through the solid material and end up at the air interface inside the seashell. It'll start making some noise. So
even though what I remember the sound being sounds like the ocean, it's actually sound waves?
Well, maybe the ocean is contributing to the ambient...
To the ambient noise that
you're hearing. Ambient noise around you.
Tell me, what is ambient noise, surrounding noise? Is that correct?
Well, wherever you're sitting now, whatever you hear is ambient noise.
Okay, so it's not a direct noise, it's like...
No, it's not speech. It's just
peripheral noise.
It could be buses driving by. It could be the ocean turning over. It could be
the sound of a bird.
The sound of a bird, a dog, a squirrel eating.
So another question I had was, after hearing a particular pitch ringing in your ears, is it true that you will never hear that same exact pitch again?
The answer is definitely no. You will hear it again. Ringing means the brain has increased the sensitivity of the stereo cilia towards a certain frequency. The cilia are damaged. While there may be a decreased ability to hear the frequency, there are ways to regenerate and repair damaged stereo cilia.
So this was a really, really interesting conversation, Dr. P, about hearing. Any of you radio listeners that would like to send Dr. P a question, contact us on our website, dr.p.isbn@gmail.com, and we'll help you with any kind of question you have or send you resources that might be of help to you. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.